WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is dedicated to bringing you the truth behind the news.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today is Monday, July 3rd, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoo. One of the most concerning cultural trends infecting American society today is the so-called transgender illness. For most Americans, this social endemic seemed to have metastasized overnight. Suddenly, every major institution, public and private, was backing this insane agenda to normalize what an otherwise normal society would recognize as a mental illness. Instead of identifying an opportunity to treat those who believed they were the opposite sex or wanted to be the opposite sex, our government and corporations began bullying us into playing along. In fact, our government even hired someone like that. As of today, trans madness is going full throttle. It has even spread internationally. Last week, we told you about a recent United Nations Commission report calling on governments to threaten and punish religious leaders and organizations that don't comply with LGBTQ orthodoxy. For this episode, we're going to dig into our archives and play two of the most important shows we've ever recorded. The first was an episode titled The Dangerous Slope from Transgenderism to Transhumanism, where we showed how insidious the transgender endgame is. In the second half of our program, we're showing our Get Them Out episode, which makes the case for how dangerous government schools have become. The episode includes disturbing clips of students and parents protesting perverse and diabolical curricula that has slithered into K-12 government schools. Government schools are one of the main institutions that's been weaponized to brainwash young children into accepting every perversity in the LGBTQ acronym of sickness, including trans madness. Let's watch. Are things getting better or are they getting worse? That's the question my colleagues and I will kick around for the next half hour. Let me introduce the fellas. So we got Gary Benoit, editor-in-chief of The New American, Steve Bonta, the executive senior editor of The New American and managing editor of The New American, John Larrabell. Well, gentlemen, I know this is a topic we actually have discussion off camera here and there. And so let's talk about it on camera. Gary, why don't you start off? Are things getting better or worse?
If you look strictly at the politics, you would have to say that things are getting worse. But I'm really encouraged because there are other things that are happening that over a longer term are going to make things better. And I'm referring first and foremost to the Great Awakening. The fact that so many people now can see that there is a fundamental problem in this country. The fact that people really are waking up and they're looking for us. They're really looking for something like the John Birch Society in order to organize and save their freedoms. And over time, I think that's going to make the difference. And of course, there are other things too, such as the blossoming homeschooling movement, the fact that parents recognize more than ever, the fact that the public schools, the government schools, are beyond repair, and they're pulling their kids out of the schools, and the kids who are now being brought up outside those government schools, many of them, I believe, will become as they grow up, part of the vanguard of the freedom movement.
What do you think, Steve?
Well, I think we need to frame, before we get too far into this discussion, we need to frame what we mean by things. Mm. So, I mean, if you're talking about the advance of science and technology, we're unquestionably getting better. I mean, even dental care is better than I was a kid. Dental care is so good now that they apply painkillers before they apply the painkillers. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. So, you know, and medicine, despite the cost. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening. The prospects for, space exploration. I'm kind of a space geek at heart. Mm-hmm. A lot of what's going on, the internet is an amazing, I won't say an unalloyed good, but there's a lot of good to it. There are a lot of amazing things that it's done, that it's accomplished. I've always been kind of a nerdy type, you'll be shocked to hear. And when I was a kid, you had to use old-fashioned card catalogs and magazines and newspapers and things like that to try to glean information. Whereas now an information junkie like me can just surf the web all day. So it's a good time to be alive for a lot of people. If you mean things geographically, I mean, in many parts of the world, you know, standard of living has improved and perhaps may continue to do so. It's been an awfully long time since there's been a major famine. I'm old enough to remember the great famines in Africa in the 90s and 80s and so forth. It used to be another thing. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of grounds for optimism there. Now, I think we all sort of understand that by things, we mean political and moral mm-hmm. things, the kinds of stuff that
liberty.
We like, yeah, that we like to talk about, you know, regarding liberty specifically. What are the prospects going forward for liberty in the United States? And that is a much more vexed question, to be sure. I think on the positive side, Gary mentioned homeschooling, for example, which is, again, this is a new thing under the sun. When I was a little kid, my parents sent me to something called a free school, which way back in the 70s, before homeschooling was even legal, was sort of a precursor to that. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I gained a whole lot. I only went for 1 year. But nevertheless, homeschooling is a very, very significant change. The amazing changes in gun laws,
yeah.
which have taken place and it seems to be,
years, John.
Yeah, just accelerate. I'll let John talk about it. It's been accelerating in recent years. Let's see. Let's get away from that then. How about what we're seeing in Congress? I mean, we've been talking about this a lot since the elections last fall. I mean, it wasn't so long ago that there were one or two people on all of Capitol Hill who, from our perspective, were the voices of sanity and reason and limited government and the Constitution and all that. Ron Paul, for example, he's probably the outstanding example. And now we've got literally dozens of Ron Paul mini-me's running amok in the House,
yeah.
creating all kinds of havoc in the good sense of the word. And these are all very healthy trends. I mean, obviously, we've got a long way to go. Now, are things getting better in the moral sense? This is a more complicated question because, even when I was young, already the so-called sexual revolution, which started in the 60s, was well underway by the 70s, which was the time when I was a boy and then became a teenager. And these things were already, you know, appalling. It had already become fashionable to denigrate old-fashioned morality, you know, shows like All in the Family with Archie Bunker and this sort of thing. Even back in the 70s, we're already, you know, the mindset was similar to what we have today, only today it's a lot more radicalized. But on the other hand, so the moral decay is very evident.
Yeah.
And the aggressiveness mm-hmm. with which those who seek to tear down our civilization, uproot it, has never been more obvious.
Right.
But by the same token, I think that has strengthened the resolve and, as we like to say, maybe red-pilled lots of people who are coming to realize that you can't just sort of coast through your life anymore, that freedom and in the larger sense, our Western Christian civilization are things that we have to fight for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think, John?
I think it's getting better and it's getting worse.
There are.
No, things are definitely – I mean, in some ways we can see things getting worse for sure. The attacks by the left and you know, the how egregious some of this stuff is becoming, the almost this vitriol and this anger, you know, yeah. among a lot of leftists in the media and in culture and even in government and how they're going after a previous president, you know, a former president trying yeah. to indict him. It's probably not going to go anywhere, but, you know, it's happening. And we're seeing it kind of rise to a certain level that we haven't seen before. However, as Steve and Gary pointed out, in some ways things are getting a lot better as well.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the homeschooling movement, you know, several decades ago, that wasn't really even a thing. And now it's getting a lot bigger. And it has gotten a lot bigger. It's probably continuing to grow. Now you see them trying to stop it in
yeah, they're gonna be
any ways
for
they
it.
Can. They, mm-hmm. Well, they're already doing that. But it's continuing to grow. And that's definitely a good thing. And as I think as Gary pointed out, you said that people who are being homeschooled now, once they get out, are going to be a lot more freedom and liberty minded, and that's
right.
definitely a good thing. As far as you know, Steve mentioned gun rights and gun ownership. I mean, again, a few decades ago, a lot of people didn't own semi-automatic rifles. Now that's like the new cool
right.
gun to have now, and been that way for a while. And they're so popular now that I mean, Americans I think are more well armed than ever.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
The tens of millions of these guns out there, there's just no way they could take them all. And yeah, we're seeing improvements in gun laws. You know, and we have concealed carry, constitutional carry laws.
26 states, yes. Right?
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I think you couldn't even conceal carry in Wisconsin, I believe.
It's the majority of the states, actually.
26. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Couldn't conceal carry at all, but now constitutional carry is getting more common. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's definitely a lot of positive development in that aspect as well with the gun rights. And I think, too, with the media, you know, we're seeing the liberal media get really, really bad. So egregious. True. But, on the other hand, you have to remember back in, before my time, but several decades ago, in the 60s and 70s, that's really all there was. You know, now we have a lot of alternative media. It kind of started with Fox News in the 90s, but that's not even that great. But now we're seeing with the internet, I mean, the kind of alternative media we have, we're an example of that at New American. That's growing and getting so big right now, giving an alternative voice to so many millions of people to get the message out there. And of course, again, they want to censor that too, deplatform us. But
well, they're no longer the gatekeepers.
No, exactly. Yeah. So in that sense too,
and that's a good thing, right?
That's a very good thing. So there are a lot of positives going on too. So it's not, I don't think it's good to be so negative and it's time to go run for the hills and grab your guns and groceries and go hunker in a bunker. You know, there are definitely positive things.
They'll find you.
Hunker in a bunker. I like that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that this is going this way because when we report the news, it's kind of pretty depressing. And so I'm actually going to roll back to some of that because I agree with lots of these. And these are parts of the points that we've already had. But for instance, one of the news stories we had reported earlier is the conviction of Sergeant Perry in Texas. And that happened by a jury that is clearly moronic. I don't know how, but so I think that's worse now because we have a populace that doesn't know what freedom should be, what it should look like. And here we have a perfect example of someone employing self-defense, that firearm, who now could end up in jail. You know, so that's, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, if I had a nickel for every time a jury came out with an inane cockamamie verdict,
OJ?
I would be very – yeah, sure. I mean, it's not a new thing,
okay,
to be
well,
sure.
That's reassuring.
And particularly, I mean, remember that the venue was Austin, Texas, which is sort of
an
island of lunacy in the midst of an otherwise sane, respectable red state, mm-hmm. probably the reddest of them all, right? Anyway – so if, at least if the Babylon Bee is to be believed.
Yeah.
So, so there's that. But there is a problem. It does seem to me that we're becoming more and more and more separated into these two moieties, So on the one hand, we have our moiety, which is, those who've been, we like to say, red-pilled or some such, who are...
Let's keep saying that because the FBI
is... We should. I know. The FBI is...
It's a bad word now.
Maybe they'll learn something. We could red-pill the FBI.
Yes. Well, there's a whole bunch of
words. Either the lights will go out.
But anyway, so we're becoming more and more resolute and more, better and better educated. But on the other hand, it seems to me that the ignorance... The obduracy and the outright hatred and intolerance that is manifest now is nothing like what it used to be on the so-called – I mean, if you want an idea of what much of the so-called American left used to be like circa 40, 50 years ago, look no further than, say, Alan Dershowitz.
Yeah.
Somebody like that, right? Okay, so Alan Dershowitz or Tulsi Gabbard or somebody like that,
Or Robert Kennedy Jr.?
Possibly, I don't know. But these people, they've honest disagree, and we'll argue with them, and we'll debate the points. But there's a certain tolerance. The watchword used to be, "I may disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it." Yeah. And obviously, that has long since been forgotten, set aside by the woke generation. And not just by the people that are donning the black bandanas and going out and burning police cars and assaulting people, but by students on college campuses who refuse to let people of with dissenting viewpoints speak. Now, I just read this afternoon that apparently Harvard University, of all places, at the instigation of Steven Pinker and a couple of other high-profile academics, is in the process of setting up some sort of a council that will be consecrated to the strict observance of freedom of speech.
No.
And this actually attracted the attention of the Wall Street Journal. Their reaction was similar to mine, which was, it's a good idea. Kudos to them if they're serious, if they actually do it.
Right.
But we'll believe it when we see it, kind of thing. So, exactly.
Right. So right. We've seen that. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
If Americans want to remain a free and sovereign nation, more people need to understand the principles and values that built this great nation. At the John Birch Society, we have the organization, the plan, and the resources to do just that. Our founder, Robert Welch, said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Go to jbs.org to learn more, including how you can get involved to work locally and impact nationally. Join the John Birch Society today.
Welcome back. I'm here with the editorial team from the New American Magazine, and we are discussing whether things are getting better or worse. So we're going to go back and, you know, guys, one of the things I want to touch on and kind of go back on is that Gary mentioned this awakening. And I think that's one of the, you know, even in the midst of all this bad news, I don't want us to overlook this awakening. There's so much news now. You know, you have the former president of the United States who's going around and he's talking about, first he was talking about the deep state, and now he's talking about this this globalist attempt or this coup at a globalist attempt for a world government. So that's really good news, right? I mean, in a way, it kind of looks bad. But I think, you know, what we're feeling is the shaking of the system and of people realizing what's going on.
It's really good news that it's so much out in the open. Mm. And I should mention that I've been involved in the freedom movement for a long time. I joined the John Birch Society in 1968. And at that time, you try to tell people that there is a conspiracy for global control and that communism was just a part of a bigger conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And that the biggest danger was not fallout, it was sellout, and that it emanated not as much from Beijing or Moscow as it did from New York City or London or Paris or Washington, D.C. People would think you're crazy. And so it was very hard. But in more recent years, it has become so obvious. It's become so apparent. I wonder, Paul, if the word conspiracy even fits anymore.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we should call it an open conspiracy, but people can see it. They
just
can
call
see
it a plan.
Right.
An evil plan.
Yeah, which is what it is. But they can see that their freedoms are endangered and people are waking up and they're waking up in large numbers.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is going to make the difference.
Yeah.
It's become part of like the public conversation now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's really common, right? Like, you know, I don't know anyone who doesn't know. I had a friend over. He's not exactly into this kind of stuff. You know, he's just... I grew up with him. He's an engineer from Atlanta, and I had him over for dinner. He was visiting, and I started talking to him about this stuff, and I used the word conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Well, it's not really a conspiracy. It's kind of out in the open. They're out there saying it." And you know, again, some people they look at it and they say, "Well, they're so brazen because they're almost done. They almost got the system up." And I remember watching an interview with G. Edward Griffin some time ago, and he was talking about how we have this totalitarian, like it's right there in the wings. And at the time, people were like, "What are you talking about?" It may have been in the 90s, early 2000s. And he's like, "The system is up. It's just, you know, it's just a matter of removing whatever, the bushes out of the way, and there it is.
The scaffolding is in place." Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, so I guess I'm Gary can relate. I'm an optimist. I think that's a good thing. You know, the question is, are we going to win? If you ask Steve Bannon, apparently we are, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think we are. And, you know, the key is to do what is right and to do what is right because it is right and for no other reason. And if enough of us do that and if enough of us work hard as well as pray hard, I think God will bless our efforts and bless this country as God has done in the past.
Yeah. We had mentioned, you know, this concern about the population not seeing and recognizing and valuing liberty. I wanted to mention one thing because we have a mass exodus from a lot of blue states mm-hmm. into mm-hmm. red states. And that tells a different story, right? That tells that these people value freedom, right? Because No? Steve? All right, go on, Steve.
Well, there is this phenomenon that's known indelicately as Californication, which is what happens when the leftists who wreck California become aghast and say, oh, we can't live here anymore. There are too many taxes. Prices are too high. It's in time. And they move to Arizona and Utah and Colorado and New Mexico and Nevada and, Montana, and Texas.
And Idaho.
And they start and then they meet, oh, well, these people here, they're so backward. They're so primeval. We've got to, you know, to enlighten them just mm-hmm. like we were back in California or in the case of the Northeast, you know, Massachusetts or whatever. And so they become refugees. But they don't even. But they bring with them the same mindset mm-hmm. and support for the same policies that created the conditions
right.
that drove them out in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's a yes. But that said, though, there are a lot of people, based people. There's yeah. another word.
Another
hear that FBI? Based.
Yeah, when you come okay. up, you got to mention.
Anyway, based people who are moving out of the these horrible blue states in the left coast and the Northeast and so forth. And yeah, they're fleeing to the likes of Texas and Tennessee and Florida. And I certainly yeah. cannot blame them.
Yeah.
It makes sense. And not only for political freedom, those are also the states where you can actually make money. Low yeah. taxes. Some of them have no income tax.
No state income tax.
Yeah. Right. No state income tax. My goodness. I mean, if you're an entrepreneur or
oh, yeah.
want to start a business, why wouldn't you want to move to a Tennessee or a Florida or a Texas or something like that?
Yeah. But what is that going to – I mean, like we had touched on earlier – now we're becoming a nation like there's such a wide chasm between mm-hmm. between the types of people, and that's not a good thing, right? I mean, we're becoming different.
Well, in a mm-hmm. sense, it's not a good thing. But what if you had a population where everybody believed the way many people in California do? That would be a worse thing, would it not? The reason you had this developing gap,
yeah,
between blue and red. Is because there are people who are going in the side of patriotism and the side of support of the Constitution, love of country, and so forth. And so we have this base, and all we need to do is fuel it and get
based.
More people involved. Based?
Based, yeah.
Based?
Yeah, yeah. And I think people, part of that awakening, going back to the awakening, people are realize. Actually, I don't know. Maybe I'll ask you guys. What do you guys think? Are people... Are these infringements, these so overt attacks on liberties that we thought as Americans we would never see, especially with COVID, is it wakening them up, or is it just partially, you know, it's kind of jogging in, but then they're like, oh, we'll go back to normal. Is this going to be a lasting effect? What do you think, John?
Well, hopefully.
Right?
I think with some people, you always see kind of a spectrum, you know.
Yeah.
I think with some people, it'll just be... You know, they get riled up for a little bit, but then once it goes away, they calm back down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of, you see that a lot in, you know, tyrannical governments that are around the world. You know, the people get angry about something and then they stop and,
yeah.
okay, we're fine again now. But I think some people will definitely
right.
get awakened and stay that way. You know, it's definitely a cultural shift we're seeing, you know, like almost a reaction to how extreme the left has gotten.
Right.
How radical it is, and you're seeing it even among young people. You'll see them pull away from it, you know, like you're seeing this whole like the LGBT and like this feminization of young men. But then you see this reaction even among some of the younger guys, the yeah. Gen Zers, where, you know, talking about Chads, you know, there's another word.
Yeah, yeah.
A Chad.
What is it?
You don't want to be feminine, you want to be a Chad, you
yeah.
know, and lift the weights and everything. And you're seeing a lot of guys get into that now,
yeah,
you know, almost as like a reaction to how. The whole woke culture is getting, you know.
Yeah, because I think there was this slow march to feminizing men,
mm-hmm.
and that now it's gotten so bad
yeah.
where men are going around in dresses that
yeah.
they're like, "Whoa, is this where yeah. we've ended up?" And it's and what's this, is it Andrew Tate or who's the guy who just got arrested?
Andrew Tate
yeah.
in Romania, as a matter of
fact. Yeah, in Bucharest. Yeah, yeah. But it's like I never heard.
Going on over there, Paul. Yeah.
He moved from here anyway, but
yeah.
like. I had no idea that people, like kids were really into it. And I read this article on mm-hmm. them and it's like young kids were getting into them. Not that,
yeah.
obviously it's not good to be chauvinist and be toxic, you know. And I don't believe there's a toxic masculinity because I believe true masculinity is not toxic,
correct.
You know. And that mm-hmm. so, but it's good to see that, you know, we had J.P. Sears whom we interviewed
yeah.
and we've interviewed Robert Malone. And those are just two examples of these very... Mm-hmm. large influencers who have been red pill
yep.
and who, because they have such a mass audience, they're red pilling others. I think this is going to last. And as long as the world doesn't fall apart or we end up in a nuclear war.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I think one thing that, you know, the likes of Robert Zeehan would point out is you have to look at the demographics. And frankly, the demographics favor our side because our side is the side of the of family values.
Yeah.
We have the babies.
Yeah.
Okay. Bottom line, right. We have the babies.
I only have 11 kids.
Yeah. Whether you're talking conservative Catholics or whatever, I think 39 grandkids.
39 grandkids. Yeah. Oh wow.
You got a great grandkid, don't you?
I have great grandkids.
Right. Well, no, no, and I mean, so I mean that, you know, in the case of Catholics, in the case of you know, Latter-day Saints and Amish,
Pentecostals,
and lots of other people generally who are of a more conservative bent. Are people who tend to have children, okay, demographically. So
they homeschool them too.
So they do. So how does the left counter that? Well, they import lots of illegals. That's what they're trying to counteract this natural trend by bringing in lots of illegals that they hope will tilt the balance. But guess what? A lot of these illegals that are coming in, you know, first generation, yeah, they may be poor and uneducated and incline the ear to the, you know, the sort of the blandishments of the socialists here, but one, you know, their children are not going to be uneducated, but they're still going to be, you know, Catholic Latinos or whatever. And so I'm not so sure that they'll be successful at transforming, you know, the country. Now, of course, in a place like China, where they even can control how many children you have, it's easier for the government to maintain ascendancy over even the demographics and, you know, brainwash everybody. Everybody has one child or now two children or whatever the case may be. And there is no differentiation amongst families. There are no subcultures that are more or less conservative. They're all under the thumb of the Communist Party and that's it. So that's much more difficult. But in a society like ours, where you do have diversity in the good sense of the word, it's well nigh impossible for them to crack down because they can't prevent Benoits from overrunning the state of Wisconsin, right?
From multiplying and filling the earth. Yeah. Huh?
So Gary, how many children and grandchildren and great grandchildren do you have right now?
He doesn't have any grandchildren. Apparently, he's lost count.
I have great grandchildren.
Oh wow,
he does.
Yeah,
I think 42 or 43 altogether, but I have to count them up.
See, and that has a huge impact. That in itself has a huge impact. I mean, I'm sort of turning this into a statistical thing because for Gary, they're family members. But statistically speaking, they are all nice, good, conservative American people who in their turn will have children and more children. And so, you know, and a few of them may fall by the wayside and turn into liberals, but most of them won't. Okay.
Is that what the statistics show? Like if you're raised in a conservative?
I think so. Yeah. And I mean, the fastest growing, you know, groups in the United States, religious groups in the United States, I was talking about the Amish, for example, they're not really politically active, but still, you know, they're
growing really.
Sure. The Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. Okay. Yeah. You know, growing very quickly. That's not maybe so much now. It's more of a generational thing. But you see this, people in the home church movement and so
that's
forth
growing
have
too.
Large families too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so that's forth. A miscalculation on their part, the immigration game. Because like you had mentioned, you know, these folks from Southern America, Central America, and, you know, Mexico, they come up here. They're not going to have any part in this, like, transgender madness or whatnot.
Generally not.
I mean, they're only going to go so far, but you never know because my concern, I guess, is with the next generation because they do a really good job in indoctrinating. And, you know, I mean, we kind of glossed over a lot of the major threats like the indoctrination, the possible nuclear war. And, you know, we had just done a segment on AI. So this turned out to be a pretty sunny outlook here. We'll see. Way to go, guys, for a change. So thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us,
for joining
me.
Thanks for having us on.
And we will do this again next week.
All right, parents, listen up. We've all seen the countless examples of how radical leftists have been destroying American schools. It's no longer just about the terrible math and reading levels. Now radical left teachers birthed from liberal universities are forcing gender indoctrination in kindergarten. They're teaching lessons on white guilt.
Freedom Project Academy has perfected live online learning over the course of a decade. I get a ton of great feedback about this program, a ton.
They're built on Judeo-Christian values, a classical curriculum. What does that mean? It means they're taught, your children are taught the way that the founding generations of the country. My own son, Noah, did Freedom Project Academy for several years when he was younger.
The more we tell our friends about these things, the more people will get on board. And I believe that we can be the catalyst to some real change.
We must save the West. Our way of life and our culture is under attack. And because of patriots like you and your project, I have optimism for the future.
For this episode, we're going to take a hard look at public schools, or to use a more accurate term, government conditioning centers. But for the sake of clarity, from here on out, we'll use the words government schools. If you went through the government school system decades ago, or even a few years ago, you wouldn't recognize it today. Government schools have grown worse over time, far worse, and they are harming American children academically, physically, morally, and worst of all, spiritually. In 2019 and in 2021, the New American Magazine published two different special reports on education. Both reports compared government schools to a burning building. The latter report asked, if the public school building were on fire and your children or grandchildren were inside, what would be the appropriate response? Start a petition? Run for school board? Call your congressman? What about organize a protest? Or perhaps form a new committee to try to inform the town about the fire? Obviously, those would all be ridiculous, if not criminal, responses. Any parent knows that the correct response to the fire would be to run into the burning building as quickly as possible, regardless of the risk, rescue those children, and then run back out and get as far away as possible from the deadly blaze. The lives of children are on the line. But is the situation really that dire? Is it appropriate to compare bad education with being on fire? We're about to show how dangerous government schools have become. And after the break, we'll interview education expert and TNA senior editor Alex Newman, who wrote a large portion of those special reports we just referenced. So let's start with the transgender agenda that has recently infected government schools. The claim that a boy can become a girl, or vice versa, by simply identifying as a member of the opposite sex is not just accepted, but even encouraged in government schools. This insanity has reached a point where a boy may be found in the girl's restroom, changing room, or locker room. That's exactly what happened recently in a public school in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, when an 18-year-old male student, a lawful adult, went into the girl's locker room and exposed his male genitalia to four 14-year-old freshman girls. His rationale was, "I'm trans, by the way." Dan Lennington, who is deputy counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, called the incident shocking. In this interview with Fox News, he describes what happened.
And these four girls, four freshman girls, just wanted to rinse off after a gym class involving a swim unit. And when they went into the shower, they were confronted by an 18-year-old who undressed, said, "I'm trans, by the way," and exposed his penis to these four freshman girls. Now, that's shocking enough, but what's more shocking is that this school district was totally inadequate in their response. Title IX prohibits sexual harassment and requires school districts to offer a number of supportive measures and investigations. But these teachers, administrators did not even investigate this matter the next week. And when the parents finally started to email about this and call about this, the school district couldn't even identify the policy. No one could tell the parents, what is the rule? What is the policy? And it wasn't even until a month after the incident that the school district actually sat down with the parents. That's a real shame. There's no clear policy here. And this could be going on in schools all across the country.
In Peoria, Arizona, this girl spoke out against woke transgender policies at a school board meeting.
If you guys have kids, say you have a daughter, around freshmen. Let's say she's in PE class, she needs to dress out. Imagine let's say, trans men watching your daughter change. I don't know if you guys would feel okay with your daughter stripping down and a guy watching her. Your daughter's privacy would be invaded, and she will forever be scarred, and she would remember that. Us high school girls should not be in fear to use the restroom or change in the locker room. I'm here today to speak out for these girls that are uncomfortable and in fear. This is not right, and we do need a change now. Thank you, guys.
Though there is pushback, the pressure on public school kids to submit to the LGBTQ agenda is intense. At a school board meeting in Windham, Maine, this mother described the pressure her middle school daughter has endured.
My daughter's middle school experience was a genuine struggle. She was harassed about her sexuality by students who are asked by the Civil Rights Club to open discussions about these private matters as part of their club goals. She's not political, but she does not want to talk about her sexuality in school. They insisted she was gay because she dressed gay and listened to gay music. She was then called homophobic because she wasn't at least bi. The same club in middle school put out their own survey without notifying parents, asking kids about their sexuality, then handed out pronoun pads for kids to label themselves in open discussion in school. Oh, and open discussion in school about sexuality and gender. It took over every aspect of this school for 3 years. By emphasizing differences and forcing conversation, discrimination and bullying are dividing kids more than ever. This literal programming for tolerance, acceptance, and equity is woven into curriculum, clubs, library content, and counselors' programming, and lawyers ensure policy is loose enough to enable it.
Not long ago, if you said there are only two genders, no one would bat an eye. People understood it to be a self-evident fact. Well, not anymore. Listen as this middle school student talks about his experience to the Middleborough, Massachusetts School Committee.
Good evening. My name is Liam Morrison. I live at 519 Wareham Street. I'm in the 7th, 10th grade at Nichols Middle School. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. I never thought that the shirt I wore to school on March 21st would lead me to speak with you today. On that Tuesday morning, I was taken out of gym class to sit down with two adults for what turned out to be a very uncomfortable talk. I was told that people were complaining about the words on my shirt, that my shirt was making some students feel unsafe. Yes, words on a shirt made people feel unsafe. They told me that I wasn't in trouble, but it sure felt like I was. I was told that I would need to remove my shirt before I could return to class. When I nicely told them that I didn't want to do that, they called my father. Thankfully, my dad supported my decisions and came to pick me up. What did my shirt say? Five simple words. There are only two genders.
While they may find the message that there are only two genders offensive, oddly enough, the woke left thinks that when it comes to pornography in schools, that's actually something we should tolerate. In Windham, Maine, this middle school boy checked out an illustrated book about two boys having sex from the school library. Then he read part of it at the school committee meeting.
I was in the library, and this book was on a stand. I'd like to read you a page. My back over my hips as I ask if we should take our clothes off. And he's saying yes before I finish my sentence. He's pulling off my t-shirt, laughing when I can't undo his shirt buttons. He's undoing my belt. I'm reaching into his bedside drawer for a condom. We're kissing. Again, we're rolling over. Obviously, you can see where this is going. I don't know if it's because we're feeling especially emotional or just tired, or these past couple of weeks have been too much. But this reminds me so much of the first time we had sex. We were both terrified, and the whole thing was kind of terrible because we didn't know what we were doing. But it was good too, so good, because we were a mess of emotions. And we were scared and excited, and everything felt new. So this sort of thing, just sort of feels like that. Nick touches me like he's scared of that any minute. Now, this book was at my middle school, and it was on a stand. When I rented it out to show my dad it, the librarian asked if I wanted more and if I wanted a graphic novel version.
Here's the boy's father, who spoke after him.
So that's my son,
okay.
11 years old. And went to his library and found that by the entry door of our library, this is the smut that he is finding.
The father then went through some of the disgusting sexual content in that book, and he managed to keep his cool when he told the school board members, "I will be a thorn in your sides." What's worse, depictions of sexual acts, straight or homosexual, are not only confined to school library books. They end up in the government school curricula. The gay, bi, and trans agenda pushed in government schools devastates impressionable children. It can be particularly traumatizing for those who've been led to believe they are boys trapped in girls' bodies or vice versa, and for those who get hormone therapy and surgery in the mistaken belief they can change their gender. Critical race theory, or CRT, like LGBTQ, has also infected government school curriculum. CRT indoctrinates children to believe that being white means being racist. In the name of racial justice, ironically, it actually creates more racial division. Blacks and whites oppose it. Listen to this black man dismantle it.
When you talk about critical race theory, which is pretty much going to be teaching kids how to hate each other, how to dislike each other, that's pretty much what it's going to all come down to. You're going to deliberately teach kids, this white kid right here got it better than you because he white? You're going to personally tell a white kid, oh, the black people are all down and suppressed. How do I have two medical degrees if I'm sitting here oppressed? How do I get, first of all, because I only got 5 minutes now. Two medical degrees, no mom, no dad in the house, worked my way through college, sat there and hustled my butt off to get through college. You gonna tell me somebody that looked like all y'all white folks kept me from doing that? Are you serious? Not one white person ever came to me and said, well, son, you're never gonna be able to get nowhere because you know the black people. But guess what? What's sickening about this whole thing is what y'all doing right now is already something I do in my community right now to speak out against stuff because black folks are getting told by other black folks, oh, you know you ain't gonna be able to do nothing out there in the world because them white folks ain't gonna let you get nowhere. Oh, you know you're not gonna be able to do it because you know, the white man gonna keep you down. Well, how did I get where I am right now if some white man kept me down? How am I now directing over folks that look just like you guys in this room right now? How? What kept me down? What oppressed me? I work for myself from off the streets to where I am right now. You gonna sit here and tell me this lie of critical race theory? Of this the reason why black folks can't get ahead because of white folks? Are you kidding me?
In relation to CRT propaganda, children are being indoctrinated into believing that America was founded and built on slavery. They're also being indoctrinated into believing that the American free market system is racist and that socialism is superior to capitalism. And when it comes to academics, the primary reason people send their kids to government schools, students are failing. That's according to the National Assessment of Educational Progress, or NAEP, which is referred to as the nation's report card. For example, in 2022, only 31% of 8th grade students were proficient in reading. That same year, only 26% of 8th graders were proficient in math. That's terrible. Can you imagine what would happen if you only accomplished your job 30% of the time? Before we wrap it up, we're going to take a look at one last very disturbing trend, one that perfectly summarizes what's happening in our schools. On May 1st, the American Civil Liberties Union announced a so-called free speech victory after a federal judge ruled that a Pennsylvania school district must allow students to convene an after-school Satan club. And back in February, in Chesapeake, Virginia, the ACLU also bullied Williams Primary School to allow an after-school Satan club. However, although it shouldn't come as a surprise, the ACLU opposes the teaching of creationism in school. So what has happened is this. We first kicked God out of schools, then Satan slithered in. So, is our analogy of the burning school building over the top? It could be argued that it's insufficient in capturing the severity of the government school's threat. A burning building presents a physical danger, but government schools endanger people's eternal lives. We're going to take a quick break now, but please join us on the other side. I'll be talking with Alex Newman about why the public schools have become so unsafe for children and what anyone who still has their children in there needs to do now. You don't want to miss this. But before we break, I want to let you know that we've also made our documentary on illegal immigration available at thenewamerican.com. Last week, we played portions of Out of Control, the immigration invasion, during Friday's show. But now we got the entire movie available at thenewamerican.com. Make sure to check it out. And we'll see you right on the other side.
Here's the news, Dad.
Is it, son? Is it?
What about this one, Dad?
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days. There's just too much baloney out there. At the New American, they cut through the baloney and give me the truth.
The truth is hard to find, but the New American has it. Check it out at thenewamerican.com.
Join me to discuss what's happening in America's government schools today is education expert and senior editor at the New American magazine, Alex Newman.
Alex was instrumental in TNA's education special reports, and he's also the co-author of Crimes of the Educators, How Utopians Are Using Government Schools to Destroy America's Children. And lastly, Alex walks the talk. He's a homeschooling parent. Welcome, Alex.
Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me, Paul.
Hey, listen, we just painted a very disturbing picture of what's happening in government schools. Are government schools really that bad, or are the examples we showed, are they just outliers?
The examples you discussed are the tip of 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 the iceberg. I mean, the iceberg is so horrendous and so massive that you could talk about it for 2 years and you still couldn't do it justice. The horror that is taking place in the government schools is beyond anything I've ever seen. They're grooming children for sexual activity. They're indoctrinating children against God, against truth, against their families. This is child abuse writ large, institutionalized, funded by taxpayers, scientifically designed to overthrow our system of government in our country. And of course, we see the fruit of it all around us as well. The destruction of our society, the collapse in morality, school shootings, whoever heard of children committing suicide, right? But this is like a new thing. Children shooting each other at school. This is a new phenomenon. Of course, it's getting worse. So what you guys covered was good, but I think people need to understand that's not even the tip of the iceberg. That is just a tiny sampling of the horror show that is the so-called educational system.
Because I'm sure you hear this probably way more than we do. You know, the few times that I have mentioned the sad condition, the tragic condition, the terrible condition that is our government schools, what I've heard a lot is like, well, yeah, but our schools aren't like that. So that's a large reason why people prefer or at least are still keeping them. You had mentioned, who's controlling the school curricula? Because we showed videos of parents pushing back. We saw during COVID, lots of parents pushing back saying, there seems to be this trend that no matter the pushback, no matter the protest in favor of sanity, it's not doing anything. So who's controlling this? How is this happening? Where's this insanity coming from?
Well, I think the simple answer to who is controlling this would be Satan. And I'm only half kidding.
Right? Cover some of that. Those satanic clubs in schools. We mentioned that.
I know. And I say I'm only half kidding because I'm only half kidding. I mean, a lot of this stuff is just straight from the pit of hell. If you look at what they're teaching, it's very much like Marxism, very much like the Great Reset. It's just a total inversion of biblical principles on every single issue. You start with the first command God gave to mankind was to be fruitful and multiply. So I've actually got the UN's Agenda 21 book for children behind me. And one of the things that they teach the children is that, Earth is groaning every time you have another child, every time it registers another birth. And on every single issue, every time is going to be an inversion of biblical principles. God said, thou shalt not steal. The schools are teaching that God must not have known that wealth was going to be inequitably distributed and that there was going to be white privilege. And so now the government needs to steal everything and then redistribute it. So who is controlling the system? It's at once a very easy question to answer and a complicated question to answer. There's a machine. I compare it to a hydra. There's no single actor. But in the book Crimes of the Educators, we talk about an education establishment. And it is an alliance of the teachers' unions. People don't realize, I think, how influential the teachers' unions are. It's not just because all the teachers are members and they train teachers and brainwash teachers. They also control the politics, right?
Yes.
Massive numbers of political elections, and not just for school board, by the way. This is for state legislature. This is for Congress. They have dumped hundreds of millions of dollars into our political process. And they basically own and operate a large number of the politicians who are setting education policy. So the teachers' unions are huge. And if you look at who runs the teachers' unions, again, it is absolutely wicked people associated with the deep state. Then you have, on the surface, you have kind of the local school board, which for all intents and purposes is nothing but a rubber stamp. I've worked with a lot of school board members over the years. They fly them to the state capitol and they give them a training session. And they say, basically, you have no power. You can kind of squabble about salaries a little bit if you want. You can maybe decide if there's going to be uniforms. But other than that, keep your hands off of the system. Just hire the superintendent. The superintendent will run it. Superintendents, of course, just like the teachers, are trained in these government-run universities, indoctrination centers, where they get an education degree, and then suddenly they think they know how to educate children. So the teachers' colleges, of course, are huge. The textbook publishing companies play a major role. You have the U.S. Department of Education, which plays a very significant role, even though it was never supposed to, or at least that's what we were told. The U.S. Department of Education now dominates huge parts of education policymaking across the country. They are the enforcement arm that keeps the Common Core standards in place, even if they've renamed them or rebranded them. A lot of the policy innovations, a lot of the weird gender stuff, I mean, even down to like the gender of the textbook authors is controlled out of the U.S. Department of Education. And then there's UNESCO, the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, which more and more is playing an enormous role in setting education policy, not just in the United States, but around the world. So when it all boils down to it, you know, the people who think I'm just going to run for school board and I'm going to fix this, as much as I appreciate the sentiment, it's terribly misguided. The school board at this point has very little influence over what happens in the classroom, very little influence over the curricula or the standards. This is all being set by deep state forces behind the scenes, including through the teachers' unions, U.S. Department of Education, UNESCO, textbook publishing companies, and of course, totalitarians like Bill Gates, who signed an agreement with UNESCO in 2004 to create global standards, global curricula, global teacher training programs, global technology systems with UNESCO, right? So it's a global system. It's a hydra. You could even cut off one or two of these tentacles and the machine would continue to devour children. So that's kind of the longer answer.
That's a good answer. And you already kind of touched on it, but let's really drill that. What is the purpose? What is the purpose of the way they've shaped education? What do they want out of this?
Well, it depends on who you mean by they. There's a lot of different interests that have kind of converged in the public school system. Now, if you talk about the people who set up the system, the guy who first dreamed up this abomination we call an education system, Robert Owen, he wanted to use the public schools to collectivize the children, to teach them a new set of values. He wanted to move us away from Christianity, away from the principles that our nation was founded on, and toward collectivist principles. And, you know, to his credit, he believed very fervently and passionately in this idiocy. He actually bought himself a piece of land and created a commune called New Harmony. And when it failed, he concluded that the reason it failed was because these kids had grown up with parents in a Christian society, believing in individualism and God and things like this. So one of the reasons he had for creating the public school system was to try to undermine that. Now, he also created a secret society, which is very interesting. And we have a whistleblower. He became a Catholic and defected from this operation. His name is Orestes Brownson. And he said the great object, and this is his exact words, the great object of this was to eradicate Christianity. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to destroy Christianity, and they knew that seizing the education system from parents, from churches, and putting it in the hands of the government would be a good way to do that. Fast forward to Horace Mann, the guy who re-imported this monstrous system from Prussia into the United States that was inspired by Robert Owen. He said he wanted to get the Bible out of the schools and he wanted to use the schools to equalize all men. He was also a utopian. He thought you could get rid of 90% of the crimes if you could just have the government educate children. Of course, he couldn't have been more wrong. You go to John Dewey, who's really the architect of the modern day system of progressive education, of what we have today. He went to the Soviet Union and just couldn't stop singing the praises of this monstrous collectivist system. No mention in his articles from the Soviet Union about the dictatorship, about the mass murder, about the starvation. But he loved the collectivizing influence of the public schools. And you fast forward to today, right? You still have the communist influence, the goal to collectivize children, to create the equivalent of the new Soviet man. You also have, and you had this even at the time of John Dewey, the super capitalists, right? Rockefeller, the ultimate capitalist, so-called, was the one funding John Dewey. He gave him millions of dollars. And so you have this very bizarre convergence of communists, Marxists, totalitarians, and cutthroat, ruthless monopoly capitalists like the Rockefellers. Why did their interests converge? Well, the Rockefellers didn't want competition. They wanted a bunch of dumbed down worker drones who, you know, could turn a screw and work on an assembly line, but not ask pesky questions or govern themselves. So they had this conversion of interest in the dumbing down, in the indoctrination of children. Fast forward to today. What do the people who control this system want? Well, they want to destroy our country. They want to undermine our constitution. They want to prepare our children for the New World Order, the Great Reset. They are now preparing them for the one world religion. And they're doing this openly now. They don't even bother to hide this. You can go to UNESCO's web pages and you'll see that this is what they're doing. So they're preparing our children for a diabolical global system of planetary slavery. And that's the simplest way you could put it.
Wow, that was a great summation. A terrible thing to think about, but that is what's happening, and we don't hide from what's really happening here. So what do we do? You had mentioned that you admire, you know, it's nice that people, you know, they go to school board meetings, but you also hinted that that's not going to work. So if are you saying, I know you've said that you and I have discussed this, there's school reform is beyond the question, right? And so what is the answer, and why is there absolutely no way to reform these education centers the government runs?
Yeah, I mean, talking about reforming this abomination is like talking about reforming my cancer. It's like, hey, you have a deadly cancer. It's going to kill you. How would you like to reform it? Maybe we could make it a different shape. Maybe we could paint it a different color. It's preposterous, right? The building is on fire. Your children are inside. They're burning to death. And after the building's done burning your children, it's going to burn your whole country, your family, your church, your community. What are you thinking about the wallpaper? You're going to run for school board and debate, whether we're going to have a porn book in the library? That's crazy. You run in the building, you grab your children, and you run out of the burning building. Even if it means, you know, people say, oh, that's going to be a sacrifice. I'm going to have to drive an older car. I'm going to have to live in a smaller house. Yeah, tough noogies, right? Your children are burning to death. And honestly,
I haven't heard that in a while. Go ahead.
That's what my parents used to say. But, you know, and I've said this in hundreds of speeches around the country and around the world. We're so far beyond reforming this system that it's ludicrous to even talk about it. And I don't begrudge people who, you know, feel called to run for school board. But you don't do that while your children are burning in the building. And the burning building is honestly not an adequate analogy. It's not a good metaphor, because a fire will hurt you physically. It might even kill you. But what's happening right now to our children is so much worse than what a physical problem could do. Because our children right now, they're being destroyed physically, emotionally, mentally, academically, spiritually. They're being turned into weapons against your family. They're being turned into weapons against your country. And really, they're being discipled by the enemies of God, the enemies of America, and the enemies of family. So as parents, it's, in my opinion, completely unconscionable for us to continue sending our children into these burning buildings. It's preposterous to talk about reforming this. And that's one thing that people really need to understand, because there's this myth out there, and it's very dangerous, and it's also pervasive, that the schools are broken or that they were hijacked. You're missing the point. They're not broken. They're working very well. They're getting like 90% of our kids, right? Perfect would be 100%. So they're doing very, very well at their intended purpose. And they weren't hijacked. They were always created for this purpose. It's just becoming clearer now that we're several generations into this process. So don't talk about reform. Get your children out of the schools. Get them in a good education program. Freedom Project Academy, wonderful Christian school, homeschooling, amazing option. There are good Christian schools around the country, but to continue to send our children into these burning buildings is one of the worst mistakes we could make as parents and as Americans.
Yeah, that's a great simple way to put it, and it's as simple as that. Like you said, get them out of these schools, homeschooling or a good private school. Alex, thank you so much for the work you do. Thank you for all the talks you give and all the research you've done, and God bless you, brother.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. God bless you, too.